Here we are at the beginning of our practice period. First day, every beginning has its own taste, its own quality. Noticing how it is for you. However long you think your retreat will be, some of us may imagine we'll be here for 3 weeks, some of us imagine we'll be here for a few hours, but of course on the deepest level we don't know. We set off in some direction, and for all of us here the direction is liberation. Leave home. All seekers are home leavers, and we leave home in order to find our true home, to find our way here. And over the course of this retreat, this coming and going retreat, we are going to be using Shunryu Suzuki's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, as the entry point for the talks and the Dharma dialogues. And last night we read the prologue, where he talks about this beginner's mind. And certainly this phrase, beginner's mind, has entered into our popular culture, is something that is thrown about. And his wonderful phrase that is often quoted, in the beginner's mind there are many possibilities, in the expert mind there are few. In one way, we are all beginners every time we sit down. And in this prologue he challenges us, saying when we first begin, we don't have any choice. We approach things in a fresh way. But the challenge for us all is to meet each moment as it is. And in the very beginning of this prologue, he says, people say that practicing Zen is difficult, but there is a misunderstanding as to why. It is not difficult because it is hard to sit in the cross-legged position or to attain enlightenment. So nice to know that it's easy to sit in the cross-legged position and easy to attain enlightenment. Really? Perhaps he's not saying that it's easy, but he's saying that there is something that is more challenging. Of course, all of us, whether we sit in a chair or cross-legged or seiza, as we sit, we encounter discomfort. These fragile human bodies were not designed to sit still. And so when we sit still, discomfort arises. Of course, when we move, discomfort arises. But our vow here in our Zen practice, in our formal Zazen, is to meet this discomfort, to sit upright in the middle of this. This enlightenment, in a sense, is this the theme of Zen. It is the liberation, this promise of awakening. And the teaching that is so clear and said again and again and again in our wonderful Zen tradition, and especially emphasized in the Soto side, that this awakening has already happened. of course, we make up all kinds of ideas about what awakening will be and how I will be after I get enlightened. But all of our ideas about enlightenment are just ideas. And so we sit in order to realize what is already here. And he goes on to say, it is difficult because it is hard to keep our minds pure and our practice pure in its fundamental sense. So right away we need to wonder, what is this pure mind? How do we keep our minds and our practice pure? And in normal usage, this pure is contrasted to impure. And we might imagine that we get to purity by removing whatever is impure. So we take out more and more. But this pure mind, he actually speaks of so many different kinds of mind. There's this pure mind and the beginner's mind and the original mind. He's using all of these to point to some way of being. And this original mind, this pure mind, he says, includes everything within itself. This original mind, pure mind, not something that we can enter by cutting off more and more, but something that we can begin to realize the purity is in the wholeness of it. This is not one thing, not pure as opposed to impure, but the pureness of including everything. And it reminded me of a passage from another Soto Zen teacher, 20th century, Uchiyama Roshi. And in his commentary on Dogen's instructions to the cook, Uchiyama says, usually we set up a world in opposition to ourself and then go about trying to pocket for ourselves as much wealth, power, or happiness from that world as we can. But when our way of life accords with the Buddha Dharma, you might say when our way of life accords with beginner's mind, we no longer construct a world in opposition to what we think of as ourself. Rather, we see that the whole world is the true self. The whole world is the original mind. So this basic delusion, this basic functioning of human consciousness creates me and the world. We set up a world in opposition to ourself. I am here and everything else is there. And then we try to get more of what we want, more happiness, less anxiety, more wisdom, less delusion. And so easy to fall into this kind of practice of trying to get more of something and less of something else. I think this is what Suzuki would say is impure practice. This practice that has some kind of gaining idea. He speaks later on in the prologue of, it said, all self-centered thoughts limit our vast mind. When we have no thought of achievement, no thought of self, we are true beginners. when we have no thought of achievement, no thought of self, we are true beginners. So as long as there is some quality of striving in our practice, as long as we are trying to get something we think we don't have, we are lost in the world of ideas. Now, we all come here because we actually do want something. We can, many of us say, well, I know I shouldn't want something, that I should have no gaining idea, but if you don't want something, if you don't really want something, then you will just be carried along by the status quo, by the karma of the way things are. This force of ordinary life, of the endless cycle of achieving and getting and doing. We come here on retreat and sit in these periods of stillness so that we can cut through. It requires great courage and great intention to stop, to interrupt this mindless forward momentum, the fierce energy of mindless forward momentum. The inertia of the way things are is so strong that it does require us to clarify. Yesterday at our opening ceremony, we explored our intention for these 3 weeks. And so to know why you're here, or to have some idea of what is it you really want. And it's not just here, but in your life, breathing in and out every day, being yourself. What is it that you really want? I once asked this question to someone, and he said, I really want a house on the coast of Maine. I said, oh yeah, me too. But then I said, and if you had this house on the coast of Maine, what would that give you? And he said, well, then I could see the sea, and it's so beautiful. And I said, and if you could see the beautiful sea, what would that give you? And he said, it would give me a sense of peace and ease in my life. And I pointed out to him that there are many people who have houses on the coast of Maine who do not live in a state of peace and ease. And perhaps what he was really seeking was this peace and ease. So to look deeply, not just the first answer that comes up, but what is it that you really want? And I think for all of us, it's some kind of authentic life, some kind of meeting things as they are, and finding our freedom. And this freedom, whatever image we have of it, is just an image, is just another thought. So we have to set some clear direction, but we cannot really know what it is that we're setting out to find. But all of us have tasted something. You wouldn't be here unless something in your experience, something you read, something you have felt or touched, tasted, caught a whiff of, intrigued you. There is this deep longing of the heart to know itself. And so when we talk about seeing the world, having this new relationship to the world, to see that the whole world is the true self. These moments when our ideas of who we are and where we are and what is going on, when they begin to fall away, and then thought of, well, I'm doing pretty well so far, or I'm not doing well, or this will happen or that will happen, begin to drop away. In some ways, on these longer retreats, and longer retreat could be just an afternoon, but there is a way that we actually get tired of doing the usual thing, of thinking the usual thing. We cannot choose to put it down, but there is some way that we get worn down, the habitual thoughts lose some of their attraction. And there is this possibility of entering into this mind, this beginner's mind that includes everything. He says, this mind is rich and sufficient within itself. This is our birthright, this awareness that just appears. We say, I see, I hear, I breathe. But when we look more closely, the first part of those statements is nowhere to be found. We don't know who it is that is seeing. We do know there is seeing. We open our eyes, the floor. And we do know there is hearing, the sound. But where it comes from and who the one who is hearing it, we don't know. Same with our thoughts, which in Buddhism, thoughts are considered another sense. The mind is a sense organ like the ears and the eyes. And thoughts just appear. We say, my thoughts, but we don't actually know whose they are. Sometimes many thoughts, sometimes few, sometimes troublesome, sometimes lovely. But thoughts appear. Breath comes in and goes out, sometimes shallow, sometimes deep, sometimes tense, sometimes easeful. And our practice, as Shunrui Suzuki says, is to meet everything as it is. To have no fixed position. He also talks, so this mind is rich and self-sufficient. He also calls it empty mind. We might read empty mind and think, well, boy, I'm never going to get that. And we might have some image of some vacuum in space and this place where there would be no thoughts. But by empty mind, he says the empty mind is the ready mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything. It is open to everything. So to cultivate this curiosity, we might say, to of course, we can notice how the mind expects, oh, another round of sitting, another this, another that. But when we turn toward what is actually arising, toward this sensation, toward this breath, we can begin to see that this place is utterly new. There is some life occurring in this moment that is on some fundamental way not related to anything else. There is moment after moment arising and moment after moment passing away. So whatever you think is simply based on what has happened up until this moment. So with this beginner's mind that is open, this beginner's mind that is also a vast mind, he says, in the beginner's mind, there is no thought, I have attained something. So no need here this morning or on this retreat or in your life to attain something. There is nothing to achieve that is not already here. So as we go on through the morning and through the day and through the week, through the life, let us treasure this arising moment. As we do our zazen, as we sit upright and still, to let everything be as it is. To encounter our life. And as we do this, as we come back to the sensation of the breath, as we come back to allowing everything to be as it is, we can begin to see that from the very beginning there is only this beginner's mind, this original mind of receptivity that has been functioning without obstruction from the very beginning. And that everything we encounter is our life. Everything that arises is simply the arising of life. The ears hear, the nose smells, the tongue tastes the salt and the sour. Life appearing, the box and the lid fit perfectly, moment after moment. Just beginner's mind, vast mind, original mind. That we can rely on this more and more and appreciate this wonderful beginner's mind. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably and we'll have now our Dharma dialogue. And this is a time for coming forward with questions from the talk or about your practice. Also comments about things that touched you, that are alive for you in this moment.
Academia right now and in books where they value so much of the knowing of the having these things built up and being able to build up stories based on other things, making those connections.
Yeah.
That coming from the place of not knowing sometimes seems it seems amateur, or it seems not what is so valued by so many people. So many of my friends, it's the people that know things, the people that that have these ideas built up, that I feel like there's something like that, like pulls me, that I want to have that knowing. I want to have that knowing so I can have this information that I can just give to others. But then there's so much that's lost in that. There's so much that you kind of turn your other cheek to at the same time. That beginner's mind, that empty space. So it's hard maintaining that or finding the place where you can, kind of come forth in your knowing, yet allow space to still be there too.
So, you know, one of the things I heard in what you said was how much you want the knowing. Mm. And that might be a place to start. You know, just feeling the strength of that yearning to know something, to be like your friends who appear to be experts or your professors. And it's very tricky here because Shinryu Suzuki says very clearly in this particular passage that this is not meant to be dualistic. And David spoke of that too. So it's not knowing as opposed to knowing. Because to be a human being in the world, you actually have to know stuff. And part of the thing that we learn to trust is that we do have the capacity to know stuff. Mm. That every time you read a book, there's probably some stuff that sticks in your brain. And it's not just about book learning. You had to learn to drive a car at one point. That's very useful. You don't always want to get in the car and think, what's this do? What's that do? You know, right? That would be the opposing kind of like beginner
song.
But like imagine Jason going into the kitchen and going, whoa, what are these little things? You know, and I wonder what I would need to do to get them to turn into food. That's not it. Mm. And that's really important. But bringing this, another way to talk about beginner's mind is freshness. Mm-hmm. Like, even though Jason does know that those little tiny things are rice, it's kind of amazing to shovel rice into the rice cooker. You know, it's like, you know how much water to put in, you know how to turn it up, but you know, that to just really be present enough to hear the sound, to feel the scooping, and when it turns into edible rice, you know, to not just go, oh yeah, rice, but you know, wow, there's this sort of open-hearted quality of the car is moving fast, the rice is cooking, this book was written by a person who experienced something that now they're sharing with me. You know, so there's that quality of bringing freshness to the learning. Yeah. And there's this trust, too. You know, the wanting mind doesn't trust that you actually will be able to learn and retain stuff. There's something in there, the greed and the fear, right? So there's something about that. Oh, if it's already here from the beginning, I need to actualize it. I'm a graduate student. I'm going to actualize it by reading this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Carol.
I had two seemingly unrelated thoughts. They're probably not unrelated. The first was about how much I love traveling in faraway and exotic lands, partly for that experience.
Yeah.
Both of, people see things in such different ways. It just opens your eyes. There's so many different ways to look at something that we think we know what it is. And then when you come back, this begins to look fresh. You know, like there aren't cows in the road. Wow, that's a drive without cows in the road. which is great. I mean, I wish it could last longer, but it does. You do come back with a sort of fresh eye. And I was also thinking professionally that there's been a lot of controversy, both sort of formally in the journals and more informally among psychotherapists, about knowing or not knowing, being an expert or not being an expert. There have been, you know, real schools fighting about why would anybody want to see a therapist who's not an expert on something, right? But I think the way some people have put it, the part that maybe makes the most sense to me, is that one of the skills that you learn is something like knowing when not to know. You know, knowing that this is a moment where you want to be taught, you want to be open, you know, learn from people and then help them put it together in a way that's new and fresh for all of us. But if you already think you know, you've closed down so much. That's why I love the first, or one of the early quotes that you said about, you know, that with beginner's mind, there's so many options or opportunities or something, and fewer
for the expert.
Right, and I think that's a really important thing for us all to remember as we try to get more and more expert. But there's a real downside to that, too.
Yeah.
Very constricting.
Yeah. Well, I think what, Melissa, what you just said about this non-dual perspective. So this is not about being stupid.
Right.
Right? And that there are really helpful frameworks for understanding human behavior, for understanding how the car works, and all of this. So how to use whatever we have in a fresh way. You know, it's not that... So the only, just don't go to school and you'll be okay. But because the mind creates frameworks for the world, and it's how we can go to the grocery store and buy groceries. It's quite helpful. So how do we use that and not be used by it? So whatever it is, and all of this Zen teaching the same way. You know, we can, so beginner's mind, we can start thinking we know what beginner's mind is, and then, okay, I'm really doing beginner's mind now. And so, you know, we always say there's no checklist. It's much more subtle. So wherever we are, yes, quite a wonderful thing to study some area of the world, to look deeply and analyze, and then go beyond, then let, you know, whatever we have. To let it go. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, James.
Thanks for the talk. It reminds me of a sentence which I don't remember who said that, but it's an ancient Zen master. And it says, knowing is delusion, but not knowing is ignorance. Mm-hmm. And so his story, historian student who studies history, I guess it reminds me that whenever I read his books in history, I thought, oh, that's the history in a particular time, in a particular place. But when I revisit after certain years, as my life has changed, my heart understands the world has changed, I revisit, I understand those words differently. Because words has its own limitation, and people who go there are in their own circumstances. They may mean one thing, but we interpret as differently because the way we grow up, the society taught, the way society teaches us is different from theirs. And by saying I know the history in that particular period is in a way delusion, but by saying I don't know the history of that particular period of time is also kind of ignorant. You know,
Wonderful. And right at the end of this, he says, you should not say, I know what Zen is, or I have attained enlightenment. So that knowing is where we limit it. Oh yeah, I know the history of the... And noticing both the how we can encounter the same words, and we do in our sutras as we chant over and over, and every time we encounter them, if we really encounter, then there's something beyond what we know. Yeah. And the delusive certainty. So many kinds of ignorance, and some is just kind of lost in a fog, But there's another kind of ignorance as well. I'm an expert on this. Let me tell you.
Yeah. And you know, the guy who said that was named Nanchuan. And he was working with his young student, Zhao Zhou. And Zhao Zhou became famous later, you know, the koan, mu, or wu. But as you were saying that, and as you were answering, I realized that what Nanchuan was trying to do with his student, that the Zhao starts out by saying, what is the Tao? What is the way? And he's kind of batting him back and forth. You know, is it like this? Is it like that? What do I do? Where do I go? And then that line comes. And at that point, Nanchuan's kind of hoping that he'll go beyond the this or that, the knowing and not knowing. You know, and he says, not knowing is ignorance, knowing is delusion. There's nowhere left to go.
Yeah.
So that there's also that every time you hear a Zen master speaking, and this will be true as we keep studying Shinryu Suzuki's words, they're not going to land anywhere. You know, they're not going to settle. If we start settling, there's going to be over to the other side. So it's beautiful that you bring that up. And I hadn't thought of it in this context, so I'm very grateful to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is great. It seems like I've always struggled with frameworks and resisted the whole, like, gotta know or F that kind of thing. It's always been, so I've been, like, kind of lost a lot. And since coming here, I mean, I literally walked in here and I had only profiled Buddhism in my mind. That's it. That's all I thought I had. You know, it's all it seemed like. But that whole thing of it's all already here is like this ground, it's just the ground. And so from that, along the lines of what everyone's really saying, it's strange. Last night I spent all this time reading about the Irish in ethnicity and family therapy book, and just kind of going, oh God, no wonder. And just like, there's, so it's like, but from coming here and being here, and hopefully everyone knows what I mean by that. It's like there's a ground to look at it all now. There's a place to look at it all from, as opposed to that whole what Camden said, and then what the story that Jen shared, and everything. Just there's just, I'm sorry to say this, there's just a way.
Yeah.
And what I love is that, well, I always just love that everybody keeps showing up here. And I don't know.
Yeah. But this is a way. So, and we can make this way into another theory, and then it gets troublesome. But there is this invitation to our life, in that is a particular kind of invitation. There are many invitations, many different traditions you could go, and they invite you in this way or in that way. And this open-hearted invitation to your own life. And that is the... then all of the theories and frameworks can be useful, but we don't have... We can use them provisionally. So helpful for a time to have this understanding, but then we let go of it. So the particular arises, and the particular is the absolute, is life itself, but we don't have to hold on to it because we know just temporary, just now appearing as you, as me. Next moment, we don't know what guise it will be taking, but we can appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. Well, let's continue with our appreciation. So we'll sit for another moment or two, and then we'll do walking meditation.